And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this third and final hour on this Thursday, this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are joined by author David Thomas, talking about a number of books. One, Seal of God, a book from the standpoint of the publisher wanted the book to include detailed accounts of SEAL training, of Hell Week during SEAL training. And we are also talking about Called for Life, the story of the Ebola doctor, as well as in this hour, what we've been waiting to talk about is the book Remember Why You Play. And Remember Why You Play, David's going to be bringing on, and we do have with us Jordan Dunnington, who is a major part of this book. Now, what I want to do, if we can, David, is I'm going to turn it over to you and kind of let you set this up and get this going and introduce the guest and how you guys came about to writing this book.
Sure. The book, as I mentioned in the last segment, was from the 2007 season. The idea came to me a year before that. I woke up at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning, wide awake, which I don't usually do at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning during football season, and I could just see basically what this book became. A very crystal clear idea of, like I said earlier, a Friday night lights for Christians. And when I had the idea, I knew exactly what school and what coach this book needed to be about. And so I checked with the coach that day, actually, and he said, let's do it. And so that started the journey. And I spent a season, if you use the word embedded, with the Lions of Grapevine Faith Christian School. And I documented their entire season. I was there every day. I think I missed one day for a funeral. And so I spent the entire season with them and documented their life stories. And mainly, as the season progressed, the life stories or the life lessons that their football coach teaches. Again, he's a coach who has a higher mission in coaching. He's an excellent coach. Had the opportunity to coach in college at college programs that listeners would recognize, but he feels he's where he needs to be, and so he has stayed at the high school level because he wants to make men like Jordan Dunnington. So Jordan was a junior that year. He graduated in 2009. He was a running back and a cornerback on that team, which going into the season was ranked number one in the state, so definitely a powerhouse in the state of Texas football. And to introduce Jordan, I think the best thing I can say is if my son turns out like Jordan, I am going to be ecstatic. I got to know Jordan very well, and he has two younger brothers, and got to know his parents and just quality family. I knew in 2007 that Jordan was going to be something in life, and he's proven me correct on that. I stay in touch with him some. We talk from time to time. I see him in a few games. And at the time, my wish was that I had a daughter and a son, that they could go to that school after experiencing what it was like there. And a couple of years later, it happened to be where we could put them there. So my son is currently a sophomore at that school. He plays on the football team, playing for Coach Hogan. And so he's following in Jordan's footsteps. And I hope that he continues to follow in Jordan's footsteps, because, I mean, Jordan is just an excellent young man with a great heart for God and a great mind for God. He's got the perfect balance of mind and heart being dedicated to Christ.
Well, that's fantastic. Jordan, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report. It's great to have you on here. And want to hear from you about your experiences and what led you to this point.
Well, first off, I want to say thank you, Doug and Joe. It's a pleasure being here. And Coach Dave, as we called him, he said he was indebted. He definitely was. Appreciate his gracious words. I think one of the largest things that I'm excited to talk about is walking through that process of what we were thinking about and how we processed everything from a coach and a staff who decided to act and express faith through love, which is really what that was all about. And going through that process and then years later, turning around and seeing how God used Coach Dave and the school and those young men that we had the opportunity to engage with, and how that story was really able to capture people's attention. Because it is Texas high school football, and we have stadiums here that, that people will shell out $60 million for. And so it's the Friday night live feeling, it's the competition, it's the feeling that you get when you step on that field is so electric. And to experience a moment like what we experienced was surreal. And I can tell you that it's still something that talking to other teammates who were there, we still all kind of just scratch our heads and think, wow, that was as crazy as that happened, but it was an honor to be a part of it.
Well, that's fantastic. Moving on to the next question, and I don't want to jump ahead. If I do jump ahead or get into an area where I'm moving too fast or you want to switch gears, definitely let me know, and we will fix that. And I'm going from some show notes here that John Robertson was so gracious enough to put together for us, and some of the things he laid out that he thinks would be very good to ask is, what was it like to play in that league and to get the success that you had?
In terms of playing in TAPS, and if I'm correct in your question, you're asking about TAPS as a whole or just specifically the Gainesville game?
No, not the physical part, but the mentality and what you had to do to, you know, put together the drive every day to get in there and play the game. How did that change you as a person, being able to participate in that?
I think what I walked away with the most from that experience, and like I said, all of us did, was there's a proverb that stuck with me, and it says, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bone. And I think in that moment I saw what can happen when people infuse hope in other people's hearts. We were on the football field, and we were across from each other, and we were supposed to be competition. And then when you see fans that traditionally root for you going to the other side and seeing what they did in terms of creating this huge spirit line for the Gainesville State players and encouraging them as they were driving down the field and scoring on us. I remember even thinking, wow, my parents are rooting against me. It was the hottest feeling. But to walk away and then see, as those fans were cheering for Gainesville State, to see the confidence that came, and then the hope that came, and then you saw the play from the players increase, and you saw them get excited and start building each other up. It really speaks to how powerful exhortation is. Looking past the exterior, looking past the circumstances that people come from, looking past the circumstances that they are in that specific moment, and then speaking to their capability. And I think it's even stronger when it's someone that you don't know. These kids didn't know the fans. And you asked about my perspective. I think that's something that stuck with me, that, all right, even if I don't know somebody, it's much more impactful, or almost as impactful, for a stranger to exhort you or build you up, and speak to your capability, as it is someone who's close to you.
Yeah, the word that came out of that game, I think the most often used word was hope. Some of the players talked about, you know, before every game, you watch your opponents warm up. You know, you kind of size them up and see how big they are, what, you know, what they look like and stuff. And some of the players told me that when they looked across the other end of the field and watched the kids from the prison school warming up for the game, and actually interject here that this was the last game of the regular season. The Faith was 7-2. They were already going to the playoffs. The game, you know, really meant nothing to them because their playoff fate had already been set. Gainesville State was 0-8. They had won, you know, had won a game all year. They had scored 2 touchdowns all season. So they played 8 games and scored 2 touchdowns. And when the players from Faith would look and size them up across the field, they said they looked like they didn't want to be there. And, you know, I think the word for that is hopeless. They just didn't have much hope. They knew, is the joke, is the coach joke to be later, we knew we were about to get thrown to the Lions because, you know, they were going up against a really good team. So they had no hope in that game. But as the game transpired, and they began to react to the fans, it became, you know, to use a little hyperbole, it became their Super Bowl. They responded to people cheering for them by name because they didn't ever experience that. They were hearing good things said about them, and when you're a teenager in a prison, you don't get that very often. So there were people just encouraging them, and you could see the hope build throughout the game. And I think you're going to post a story from one of the local TV stations on your website, but yes, there was a scene after the game that was just incredible. And it became kind of the photo that stood out as this whole story went viral. And I mean, literally all over the world, we heard from people at all parts of the globe that watched this video. They lost 33-14. They scored 2 touchdowns after scoring 2 touchdowns all season. Now, we'll have to say that the Faith coach did kind of manufacture things so they could have some success, if you know what I mean there, to allow them to experience that. But after the game, the two teams gathered at midfield and prayed, and then some of the players in Gainesville State School got their little water bottles, squirt bottles, and squirted water on their coach like they had just won a Super Bowl. And that's after losing 33-14. So if that gives you any indication of what happened to those kids during that game, you know, it's just a picture that just still stands out from the game, the people who were there and have heard about it and read about it.
You know what? This is a fascinating story, folks. We're talking to David Thomas, the author, and, of course, the player of the game. The book, by the way, Remember Why You Play, and Jordan Dunnington is the player. He was there, you know, and this is the kind of stuff movies are made of course, if there's financing. But anyway, this is the kind of... This is the stuff movies are made of. This is stuff books are written about, of course, Remember Why You Play. But many life lessons can be applied here, and I want to ask you, because I don't, unless I missed it, whose idea was it to back the opposing team like this? Whose idea was it?
This was the head coach of Faith Christian, Chris Hogan. These two teams had not played before, and what had happened was Faith had moved up into a new classification and had been placed into a district with Gainesville State School. And when he saw the schedule, every year when he gets a new schedule, you know, he kind of goes through and, you know, this team is going to be good. This team's, you know, got a great tradition. This team's like this. And he got to Gainesville State. He knew they were a prison school, but didn't know much about them. But just something stuck in him that something had to be done with that game, that it wasn't going to be just a game. And so he, you know, he continued to pray about it over time. And one day, in his prayer time, he got the idea of giving them fans because he knew that they had no hope. He could see, he could visualize. He's been in prison speaking and stuff before as parts of ministry. And he saw the faces of the people who are in ministry, and he could see the kids, teenagers, inside that situation, inside that fence where they just don't have hope. And he could see, he could visualize faces that just were hopeless. And so he knew then that they needed someone to show them that, as he likes to say, in this country, there are people who are willing to give you a second chance. And so that was kind of what he wanted to come through that night, was that, you know, if you, and again, these kids earned the right to leave the facility. They had to be on great behavior. They had to have good grades. You know, so it's not easy to maintain that eligibility. But the 14 who came that night had proven themselves that they were doing right things. So he wanted to speak encouragement into them and give them fans for a night. And I think Jordan even had a real interesting perspective before the game that he talked to Coach Hogan about. I'll let him tell you about.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think one of the things that when Coach Hogan let us know what was going to be happening, myself and even some of the players, we knew that that was part of Faith's mission. Part of Faith's mission really is, they say they want to graduate authentic Christian leaders, and a lot of that looks like Faith expressing itself through love. But a lot of us players thought, okay, what about, we want this to come across as authentic. And I think there was a little caution in the beginning to say, if we're going to do something, we want them to know that this actually is coming from our hearts, and we're not just trying to create a huge stage and make something happen. And Coach Hogan and the staff, they were very receptive to what we said and when I talked to him about it. And I think it really dawned on me two times that this was authentic. One was when they had us create some notes of encouragement for the players. And that was when all of a sudden, when you go and you talk to somebody and say, well, I really want this to be authentic, and then you have the opportunity to be authentic, that's when it really hits you. Oh, wow, I'm involved in this. I'm involved in this process. And words matter, and words are powerful. And then afterwards, going back to how Dave explained just how jubilant the whole team was. I feel like authentic effort produces authentic results. Moments like what we saw after that with the water bottles and how we all got together and prayed in the middle of the field and hugged the guys. Those aren't something that you just rehearse. That was just natural. It was organic, and it was dynamic, and it was something that stuck with us. And definitely sticks with me, and that authenticity breeds authenticity.
That's a wonderful statement.
I told you he was good tonight.
Yeah,
he's a great young man.
Wow, how old were you when? How old were you during that game?
I was 18 at the time.
Okay,
so it was my senior year, and. It was a cool experience to be a part of, absolutely, and glad I was able to be there, really, because Coach Dave had been there since my junior year and had been around the team that whole time, and then we got to see him the next year, and the fact that all of this came together when it did, I heard you guys mention earlier, there's some things God just does that are outside of our realm of understanding, and he just put things together, and it blows my mind even talking about how that all came about and where we are today.
Yeah, I've talked about how this story went viral, the different places that picked up on it, you know, and wrote their own versions of the story or made their own videos of it. That game almost went unreported. The Wednesday before the game on Friday, I got an email from one of the assistant coaches who said, hey, we got something special we might be doing Friday night. Do you want to come and see if it's a story? And so I was working at the newspaper at the time, and I didn't know what was going to happen, really, but I made arrangements to be there. And Coach Hogan had not wanted to even publicize it. When I called him, and of course by this time we knew each other really well, when I called him and told him I was coming, he had kind of a mixed reaction. Part of him didn't want me to be there because he didn't want any attention coming to it. But at the same time, he relished the attention that would come, only from the standpoint that he likes to put Christianity out there in a place where people have to confront it. You know, he's as Jordan would tell you, I say confrontational in a good way. He doesn't back down from his Christianity, and he likes to put Christianity on display, and that's what he knew was going to happen that night. So while he didn't want attention coming to it, he also saw the opportunity for people to learn what would happen and have to do something about it in their minds and in their hearts. And so, you know, that I showed up that night, and I was the only reporter there. So it was within 2 days of not even being reported. And then, like I said, it got picked up by other places that ran that story and wrote their own versions. And ESPN wrote about it, and they had over 2 million hits on their article they wrote about it. And it just went literally viral. Huh. Jordan can tell you how crazy it got around the school after that story got out, with all the media requests and everything coming in. Just people just stunned and moved by what had happened and wanting to find out, you know, why did y'all do this and stuff.
Yeah, tell us about that, Jordan. That sounds like an interesting position for you to be placed in.
Yeah, it definitely, for us, especially... People always talk about millennials being the social media generation. For us to see over social media or over the internet how a story blew up that quickly, we're just sitting here as 18-year-old wide-eyed kids just saying, wow. It gave credence to a lot of the things that Coach Hogan was saying, because like Coach Day says, Coach Hogan is forward in the way that he presents his faith. And for high school kids who are listening and who are looking up to their coach, then we did listen to a lot of what he was saying. But, I mean, you're a high school kid. You're going through your life and you're dealing with everything that you feel is important at the time. So sometimes things go through one ear and out the other. But to see that when we acted on some of the principles that they talked about, and then to see the domino effect, not only of how it affected the people that we engaged with, that we connected with, but then to see how that itself spread out and encouraged other people across the nation. I even remember after I had graduated, I was in college, and I got a couple of Facebook messages from people who just said, hey, I just want to let you know, I read the book, and the way that you guys carried yourself, that was very encouraging. It was encouragement to me. Things like that where it's just unbelievable. But it speaks to the power of hope, because hope is something that people want to grab onto. You can look in any arena across the country at that time or even now. People love to believe in hope. And thankfully, the gospel working itself out in action always will provide an opportunity for hope to spread.
You know, it seems like that day, you know, the football, and that was certainly, it took a backseat to developing expressing character, developing character of young men and showing the character of the people around the young men. I mean, what an example. And yeah, you know, I mean, this started something, didn't it? If I'm correct and I'm reading this correctly, or read this correctly, I should say, this started something. I mean, this, what happened that night began something big. It was the beginning of something much bigger.
Yeah, and what this Gainesville State was used to, when they would play a team, they would give them goodie bags, you know, with desserts and them, or, you know, little things of encouragement like that after a game, or, you know, maybe give them a Gatorade and a burger or something like that. So people would do nice things with them, but no one had ever gone anywhere near this level. And as a result, everywhere they went after that, what I called the faith treatment happened. They started treating them like faith did, even in basketball season. Which they was, you know, started 2 or 3 weeks later for them. They were getting the same type of thing where fans would root for them. So the next football season, fans would root for them. I talked to a coach at a prison school in Tennessee, a very similar school in Tennessee, and he told me that he had been there 30-something years, and all of a sudden one night this team just rolled out a bunch of fans for his players, and he had no idea where it came from. He said, I'd never seen anything like it, and it turned out that they had heard what had happened here in Tennessee. I talked to people in Florida who had similar stories, and it raised an awareness of what can happen. And even in the town of Gainesville, where this prison facility is, each year the kids would be on a float for the Christmas parade, the town Christmas parade. And that year, the people from the school noticed just a huge difference in how the community reacted to them. The people in the community were more mindful of them and had heard what had happened inside the walls, inside the fences, and how the kids had responded to it. And so at that Christmas party, even just the kids on that float were experiencing the community people reaching out to them that they never had before. So, I mean, it completely turned a lot of things around, even within the Texas Youth Commission, which runs the prison system for teenagers. You know, I talked to people from there and follow-up stories and things, and it just sent an energy throughout the whole state youth prison system of what can happen. And so facilities all across the state, people start just volunteering to be mentors or coming to speak encouragement to kids. So it was, I mean, things just happened immediately that these places had never experienced before, and it's all because of that one game.
This is so good. You know, we hear today about, football players can't bend the knee, can't say a prayer before the game. We hear all of this bad news. We're constantly inundated with this. We have now just a tremendous story. And Jordan, I have a question on the other side of the bottom of the hour break here I want to ask you. And that's kind of how this affected the other people. What you saw that took place with the young men around you as well, how that affected them. I'm really interested in that. So on the other side, we're going to be getting back our guest, David Thomas, author, 11 books, best-selling author, and of course, man of the football game, the subject to Remember Why You Play, at least one of the players, definitely. Jordan Dunnington, going to be right back. Stay with us. HagmanReport.com. That's our website, Hagman & Hagman, for show information. Folks, subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on social networking. And don't forget, Real Tech Eric. Hagman and Hagman, we're coming to you full throttle right here from our radio and television studios located in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. You know, it's seldom do we talk about the life-changing events, okay? Now, we've got an author, David Thomas, writing about, wrote 11 books, but just three of his books, talking about the life-changing events and how, you know, each and every one of us, I really believe we can get kind of a sense, if you will, how things can change us positively. And even with all of the crud we're facing, and we're facing a ton of crud, I mean, it's coming at us like, you know, like a storm, right? Well, yeah. Look at what things, what is taking place. And certainly you can manage your events in such a way. Well, just ask Jordan Dunnington, just ask David Thomas. But before we get back to them, I want to ask you folks, 14% return, how do you like that on average? I mean, not promised, you know, certainly, but precious timber, my goodness. We had Alex Wilson on not too long ago talking about precious timber. This is a revolutionary way to invest your money, and I got to tell you, I really researched the heck out of this. Now, you know, you can have all sorts of stuff in your 401k. And one of the things that I thought was just an amazing thing, if I had a money tree, put in my 401k, I would. But this is almost as good. Precious Timber offers investments in timber. And of course, it's self-directed 401k as well. But coconuts, think about this. Worldwide demand in making coconuts is one of the highest yield, I'm sorry, worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops. And I had to really research that to really believe that, because how often do you see a coconut? But it's true. In fact, as a matter of fact, Coke and Pepsi and many high net worth individuals have invested in coconuts as growth investment for long-term income. Direct ownership of fully managed coconut acreage is now available to accredited investors. And folks, it could yield as much as 15% per year. I kind of understated it at 14. This triple bottom line opportunity generates a measurable, beneficial social and environmental impact alongside an attractive financial return that lasts for up to 60 years. Think about that as you're doing your investment planning. You can help Precious Timber create jobs, educate children, protect our planet by growing coconuts on prime farmland close to the tropical Costa Rican border. Qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com. That's right, I said it, profitsincoconuts.com. You can call them too, 855-888-6288. To receive more information on that. This announcement, by the way, does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Just so you know, that's a legalese in case you're wondering. Offering made by prospectus only. Again, call 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. And let me just add this. Alex Wilson, a fantastic man. You got to go back and listen to that interview with Alex Wilson and those people of looking for solid investments. This is it. I mean, it surprised me when I looked at it. What a fantastic opportunity. Again, profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com. So, I'm going to kick it back to you. I left hanging in that question with Jordan about how that affected others. So,
well, we can start there. We're talking with author David Thomas and a guest that he's brought on, Jordan Dunnington. And before the break, you asked a question about how the what was it that you asked, that how his experience affected the other players on the team. So we'll turn that right to you, Jordan. How did your experience positively or negatively,
or the actual experience,
affect the players around you, whether it was positively or negatively, and did you receive backlash?
I think on there are two ways, two things to say, in terms of the experience that I had and the experience that the players had, and I think It's representative, really, of how people can react to something like this. On one hand, as players, we realize, wow, we were part of something that's really cool, that has inspired other people. And like I said in the beginning, it really showed that some of the principles that Faith was teaching and that our coach was trying to get across to us really could have a positive effect. And I think amongst ourselves, it helped us recognize how blessed we were to be in an environment, one, where you had a school that was at all times speaking to your capabilities, that at all times was giving you positive principles and infusing those with faith and being able to have something to rely on, at all times being able to have the message that they were trying to impart spoken and encouraged to be worked out in your life. But on the other hand, when you're grateful, one of the things about gratefulness is it causes you to recognize what could have happened without that blessing. And when I think something that stuck with me these days as I've grown up and look back on that experience is PBS did a story about the school to prison pipeline and how a lot of students who are out of school and have disruptive behavior, they're usually sent back to the place of their angst and unhappiness, which is home environments and their neighborhoods. The negative influences come, they become stigmatized and then drop out of school altogether and many times go on to commit crime. And it made me specifically see that I was blessed to be able to grow up in an area and be around a group of people who encouraged me to stay on the right path. But on the second hand, you also see that for the Gainesville State players and for us, it taught us, hey, because you have been given this blessing, because you've been given this opportunity, because you're recognizing there's a reason to be grateful, give to somebody else. Let your faith express itself through love. Don't sit back silently and wish them well. Don't not act. Do something. Add some faith to your action, or add some action to your faith. Because if we had all just talked, we used to have this moment every Thursday before the games where we would sit back and the team would go around in the locker room and we would share quotes, or we would share scripture, or we would share commitments on what we were going to do that Friday. But if we had taken moments like that and never acted on them, then you wouldn't have the impact that you had. If Coach Hogan had said, well, this is a great idea, maybe next time. If Coach Dave had said, woken up at 3 a.m. in the morning, like you said, and said, well, this is a great idea, I could see this working out, and then didn't go, follow through. If those fans didn't show up like they did and huge amounts of support, then it would have just been a great idea. And it's great to see that we're able to see faith worked out. The other hand, you asked in terms of positive and negative, sometimes there was some pushback from students or who thought, well, maybe this was a bit too much, and why did we have to do this? And I think that just comes with acting from your heart. Sometimes people may not completely understand motives, but for the people who were there and the people who really were able to walk away having learned something, you can't argue with the fact that that affected all of our perspectives in a positive way. You can't argue that it affected those Gainesville State players and their perspective to the point where the coach even spoke to the fact that the culture was different. And you can't argue with the fact that there were people around the country who decided to act in a positive manner because of that as well. So God can make all things good, and that is a cool story to learn from that.
Yeah, Jordan talks about putting your faith into action. I think something that's gotten lost over the years since this happened is that there were two cases earlier in the season where somebody related to the football program obeyed what God wanted, and the results that happened. And I think that positioned the coaches and the players perfectly for this Gainesville State game and what it became. But there was at the beginning of the season, they played a team, and number 74 on our team was somebody they had trouble stopping. I'm sure Jordan remembers this. And 2 days later, he died in a car accident. And the following week, the faith players went to their head coach and said, we'd like to attend the funeral as a team. And so he then got on the phone with the other team's head coach and said, you know, would this be okay? My guys want to do this. What do you think? And he said, sure. And so Jordan and his teammates, and this was a completely a player-led thing, which is they were following what their coaches had modeled for the years they'd been to school. On their own, they came up with this idea to go attend a funeral and show their support for a team that they had just played. And then also about that same time, there was a team from the New Orleans area that flew into the Metroplex to play a game, and that was the weekend that Hurricane Katrina hit. And so they were delayed in getting home. And the faith parents did a good job of stepping forward and coming up with housing and providing meals for them. They had like a barbecue dinner, and the faith players sat down with them and shared a meal and talked and got to know them. And so while they were dealing with this uncertainty of Hurricane Katrina back home, the faith players got to see what it was like when they gave a little bit of themselves into someone who was in kind of a tough spot at that time. And I mean, if you don't mind me asking Jordan a question. Jordan, do you remember those two things, and do you remember how that really seemed to set y'all up for what happened with the Gainesville State game?
Yeah, I do. I remember, I could be getting his name wrong. It may have been Shane Allen, I think.
Yes, that was his name. Yeah, number 74.
Mm-hmm. And I remember going to that
to that funeral, and we were all dressed up in our jerseys, I believe, and we just stood silently and paid our respects. And I remember that because it was odd to me how many people were really just moved that we were there, and we didn't say anything. We just showed up, and Coach Hogan will call that the ministry of presence, of being there for somebody in grief, because sometimes in grief there's not a lot to say, and even the things that we do say, I mean, that's what everybody says. So sometimes it's better just to be silent and to show the support in that way. And then with the team from New Orleans, it was, I forgot which hurricane it was, but it was
Katrina.
But I do remember that we helped out there as well, and that was a positive experience, because we were able to sit up there with and talk to the players and talk about where they had been and talk about their experiences. So we were able to use those as building blocks. So that way, when we did something for Gainesville, it didn't seem out of place or really off the wall. We knew that this was something that they just kind of did, and we were glad that authenticity came across, and that there were actually authentic results from that moment.
Okay. I got a question that doesn't pertain necessarily to you, but what we're seeing in the NFL, this divide between the players about the national anthem, the standing, and we see a significant drop in the ratings. And many of people attribute that to the disrespect or the so-called disrespect that players are showing during the national anthem. In your experience in sports and being part of teams and having that team pride and the freedom to go and put it all out on the field, what would you say to the people out there in the NFL who are making these astronomical amounts of money and taking these political stands? Is there a place for it? One, two, do they make a point? Or three, is there something completely wrong with the players and the atmosphere inside of the NFL today?
Are you asking me or are you asking Coach Dave?
No, I wanted to get your take on it, and then we can get the coach's take.
Okay. I think we're definitely at an interesting time, and I think it really goes back to that. It's funny that you asked that, the faith expressing itself through love. I don't know if Kaepernick is a Christian or not, but I do know that he loves the people who are being affected by what he's kneeling for, and so he's making authentic action, and like you said, authenticity breeds authenticity, whether that's positive or negative. He's being authentic and expressing himself and saying, hey, I love the people who are being affected through what's happening in this country, and I think that has bred the authentic reaction from both sides. I specifically think that if you are blessed, kind of how I said, we were grateful to not be in the same position as a lot of the Gainesville State players. But just because we were blessed to be in a different situation, socioeconomically, spiritually, education-wise, didn't mean that we couldn't still look past the exterior and speak to their capability. And I think just because an NFL player is removed from some of the ordinary things that happen to people,
and specifically on this topic of police respect and police brutality, both sides, I think that he still can make that statement, because he is grateful that he has made it to that level, and he just wants to express that gratitude through loving those who are being affected.
Mr. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I will always stand for the national anthem. I love my country. I appreciate the ability that God gave me to live here, and I will never take this for granted, this country for granted. That being said, people have the right to do what they want when the anthem is played. And if they choose to take a knee or turn their back or whatever, that is their right to do it. You know, and then people have the right to then talk about what has happened, you know. And we've got into to a state of this country where everybody talks about their right, but not everybody else's right. So if you disagree with Colin Kaepernick, you need to recognize that he has the right to do that. And I do believe that regardless of what he's doing, I know there is a problem that he is trying to bring attention to, and there's a problem that needs to be addressed. How we can do it is different matters and things like that. And the people who support Colin Kaepernick need to also understand that people have the right to express their opinion about what he's done. We just need to get off this, I have my right, and forget about other people's rights. And I know these are fresh numbers on viewership being down, and I think, having been in the media for a long time, I haven't had a chance to really look at them, but there's a possible trap there that I'd like to express caution about. I want to know how they can attribute the drop in viewership to the protest of the anthem. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. I don't know. I have not heard how they can attribute that, because I know that on broadcast, the large majority of games do not show the anthem. You know, so this is, people are not, you know, turning off a TV during the anthem or because of what someone's during the anthem, you know, except for maybe your national broadcast. So I do have a little bit of caution there on those stats, and they may be correct, and the interpretation may be correct, but I haven't seen yet how they arrive at saying that's the cause of it. So I just do want to express that's a possible trap statistic.
Yeah, and you should know, given your experience. But alternatively, what would cause that, or are you questioning the stat itself?
I'm questioning if there's a direct connection, and I'm not speaking from doubting it. I'm just saying I haven't seen how they've determined that there's a direct connection at all. That's all I'm saying. Is just, you know, how do you know that's the case? And if you say, well, you know, because of this, and I say, okay, then that is true. I just haven't heard that expressed yet. So, you know, the skeptical journalist in me still, you know, kind of wants to see, because unfortunately today facts get just used to promote somebody's side, and it could be very easily done to say, oh, viewership's down, maybe because the games aren't good this year. You know, it might be just that. But someone can make that statistic say what they want it to say. They, you know, there's an old expression, statistics don't lie, but statisticians do. So I don't doubt the statistic or the connection. I just kind of want to see how that's being drawn is all. And then, you know, before I go to a conclusion yet.
Okay, gotcha. And just to wrap up our time with you tonight, you're the author of 11 books. Three we talked about, Called for Life, Remember Why You Play, of course, is what we're talking about right now. And, of course, we must not forget Seal of God, about the Navy SEAL. But in wrapping up this segment now in the show, oh man, such feel good things. Such you've been involved in so many positive things.
Mm-hmm.
What here in the last few minutes we have, and we got 5 minutes. And Jordan, if you want to jump into here with your final thoughts, give our audience your final thoughts about where we're at today as a nation. Everything you've experienced, Jordan. I know you're a young man, but you've got a you've got a sense about things too, given your experiences. But Jordan, I'll tell you what. We'll start off with you. Where we are as a nation, given your experiences, Give us about a 90-second synopsis about where you think we are, where we're headed, and what we can do about it. And then I'm going to toss it through, and then we'll hand it over to Dave to close.
I think two verses come to mind. One is hope deferred makes the heart weak. I think that there are different sections within the country where their hope has been deferred. Whether you're talking to people who in the workforce as things are changing and feel like they're not being that they're being left behind or not being properly given opportunities to change with this pace of the economy, or didn't experience the same success as others, or those who feel socially we should be farther along than we should be. I think that there are a lot of people whose hearts are weak, and especially with the election, I know everybody is tense on both sides, and it kind of just gives you that anxiety inside. And then the second one, without vision, the people perish. And I think that speaks to right now America is clamoring for vision and for a steady vision, and we're unsure about our vision. But I do know that there's one person who has 2020 vision, and that's Christ. And I think that the people who set the vision moving forward will be the church, as long as we can grapple with the issues that the world is dealing with, but grapple with them through a faithful lens. And then we can start setting a vision, and that I think that's how you have change and still hope in people.
Absolutely.
Amen. Well said. Well said.
Yeah, George, are you 25 or 26 now? How old are you now?
Just turned 26 last Thursday.
Happy
we
birthday,
need
bro.
Jordan
Happy
in birthday. National leadership. We need Jordan in national leadership, don't we? We need, I mean, he answered a question better than I could, and I'm a little older than 26. Let's leave it at that. But we need people like Jordan, young people who have that biblical worldview, who have been trained up to, not brainwashed. They've been taught how to think. And you can tell from the way Jordan has spoken over this past hour, he was brought up and taught how to think for himself. And he thinks through a biblical worldview. And that's what we need. We need people. I mean, sports is such a huge platform. I love sports so much. My kids play sports. My daughter's a college volleyball player. My son's a high school athlete. And sports has been so important for us as parents, because it's opportunities to parent into their lives that sports has given us. And I've seen this faith football program, you know, since 2007. I'm now a part of it. You know, my son plays there, and I'm a part of the coaching staff only on Friday nights. I'm not a coach, but I help them out. Sports is such a huge platform, and we need to take advantage of that. You mentioned Colin Kaepernick. You know, he recognizes his platform. You know, he's using it. That's fine. That's great. Tim Tebow has done the same thing. That's great. You know, thank you for Tim Tebow. You know, thank you for what he's done. Athletes need to see that, but mainly coaches, because they're the ones who have the kids under them at the most formative years in their lives. And they have so much opportunity to pour into kids and to direct them and steer them. Sometimes those kids don't get fathering at home. They may even have a father at home and still not get it, but coaches have that opportunity. So we need coaches like Coach Hogan, who will help us develop kids like Jordan Dunnington, who's not a kid anymore, but was a kid who had great parents who partnered with their school and their coaches to bring them up to be a leader. And we just need a bunch of Jordans. And to give a very short answer to the question, I have a little saying that I wish more people would use. And It skirts controversy, but you know, that's okay. I'm not trying to play with the controversy. I'm just taking advantage of a phrase that's very popular now. But my motto, and I want people to capture this and share, is every soul matters. If we were to take the perspective that every soul matters, then skin color wouldn't matter anymore. I mean, me and Jordan are different races, and we can talk about anything. We have, I mean, there's a big age gap, but we can sit down at lunch and talk about great things and life things, and we have, because there's a mutual respect, because we know, I don't see Jordan as a life. I see Jordan as a soul that God created and Christ died for. And we were to see more people through that lens, if we were to just say to ourselves, every soul matters, things would change drastically in a hurry.
I don't think we can top any of that, whether it be Jordan Dunnington. Thank you so much, my friend, my young friend. Thank you so much for your gift of time tonight and your story. And Mr. David Thomas, author of 11 books.
David Thomas, yeah.
Go figure. I can't.
And in the book we were just talking about in this hour, Remember Why You Play, also Called for Life, as well as Seal of God.
Yeah, that's right. So thank you both for you've actually closed us out. So thank you both for your time on the Hagman and Hagman Report. Mr. Thomas.
Sure, thank you.
Always welcome back. God bless you both. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you all.
All right. Folks, that'll do it for us tonight. Now, tomorrow we've got
debate coverage.
Yep. Some additional things.
As well, Joe, as guest Trey Smith.
Yeah. Now, Joe, tomorrow night, we're going to lay out some very interesting observations. As an emailer sent to me, a listener sent this to me, the WikiLeaks, the accusations against Assange, perhaps San Francisco related. More on that later. Until tomorrow, God bless.